Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and I have another wonderful guest with me today, Karamia Pandozi. Did I butcher that?
No, you got it right.
Fantastic, fantastic. So yeah, we are going to get into her story of how Kenpo and the martial arts found her. Before I turn it over to her, I usually kick things off with just a quick background of my history. I started in Kenpo in the early to mid 90s. And since then, I have trained in Taekwondo and Hapkido, did some Western boxing, and I've recently started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai. I also have a advanced rank in Capoeira, so I stay pretty busy. And you know, as if I didn't have enough to do, I decided to start a podcast too. So yeah, that's my little lack of time management, but hey, it's fun stuff. So. So we're going to go ahead and turn it over to our wonderful guest here. How did Kenpo find you? How did you get started? Let's take it back to the beginning.
Well, I started my Kenpo journey, I suppose, when I was about 12. My mom just, wanted me to do something, wanted me to do an activity, and she said, I want you to, learn how to take care of yourself too, if you ever needed it. And so she just brought me, she didn't really know anything. She just brought me to a place that she thought was good. And I stayed there for a while. It was a very, for what I know now, it was really not the best place to be to learn the art. It was very rah-rah karate type of stuff like that, for little kids, mm-hmm. They claimed to be really great and everything, and it really wasn't. But she didn't know that, we didn't know that, nobody knew that at the time. But I actually had stayed at that studio for, I don't know, until I was 15 or 16 or something like that, a few years. And then I had left there, and I had met my instructor now, Francisco Vigaru, and I had met Mr. Tatum and David Pantano, and all my, they're friends of mine now, which is wild. And everything just kind of happened from there and changed for me in my Kenpo career since then.
Gotcha. Now, you didn't have any kind of previous interest in the martial arts or anything? It was...
No, I really didn't. Like I said, my mom just brought me to this place, and I just carried on, and I realized that I really liked it, and I noticed that I could get really good at it. So I just decided, I was like, well, I think that this is what I want to do. And as I got older, I kind of noticed and realized this could kind of be my ticket out of a normal average job or career or anything like that. And I realized that very young, that if I just commit myself right now and I make the commitment to do it, I think I could pull it off. I think I could do this for a living, with other, obviously with other things involved, fitness and such, but I just made the commitment. I promised myself a long time ago. It's if you can do this, this is what you're going to do. So I did. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, did you get any insight into what drove your mother to taking you to the class?
No, she just wanted me to do something. I think she probably, just how, parents might be sometimes I want you to do something, and I, get you out of the house for a little while. And she tells me the story of, apparently, you go for your first lesson or whatever. And apparently in my first lesson, I really didn't like it that much. And I went home and I didn't want to do it again. And then she kind of nudged me a little bit of just like, hey, you should try that again. So I did. And then that's when it just kind of stuck. I think I was probably a little bit older. Like I said, I was like 12-ish, 12, 13, right around there. So. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. I usually try and stay away from controversy on the show, but I will say this, that don't let your kids quit martial arts or really any activity. We have a lot of today's youth don't really kind of stick with things as they should, and the martial arts provides so much good qualities and good things that the second the child reaches some adversity or some difficulty with what they're doing, and they immediately want to move on to the next thing. And
it's definitely very noticeable.
right on. Now, so was this first school? Was it a Kenpo school, or was it different?
Yeah, it was. I'm not one to like talk negatively about anybody or anything, because obviously that's their livelihood too. But it was a lot of false advertisement per se, as I think maybe a lot of martial arts studios are, of you'll learn life-saving self-defense skills and all of this stuff, and get taught by this ranked of this person, and you go there and then they don't make contact, or they don't do sparring, or they don't do X, Y, and Z. And well, how am I supposed to save my life if I've never hit another person before, So it was kind of strange, and there was a lot of just strange things happening there. But when I had left there, and like I said, I had met all of these people that are now my friends, this whole world of different types of martial arts and Kenpo opened for me, just because I didn't know that really anything else like that existed. And I was so excited, and I just remember wanting more. Like, I always knew that there was more out there than what I was receiving at that time. I just didn't know how to get it, or I didn't know where to get it, or I didn't realize I could be so close to it. So when all of that happened for me, it was really, really eye-opening, and I'm so grateful now, because people ask me, well, how long have you been doing this? And it's like, well, since I was a kid, but I only started taking Kenpo and my training and my business and everything really seriously, when I was 18, 19 years old is when I started to meet, everybody now, and kind of get in this traction of this very wide Kenpo community. So.
Very nice. So talk about the kind of the early, what was it like in your early training? Was there any kind of things that stood out, or memorable moments that kind of stood out that I'd like to share?
I think there's a lot. I think one of the bigger things that definitely stands out for me, like I had stated earlier, is the day that I had gotten to meet Mr. Tatum was a really big deal. And I wouldn't be with my instructor, my sensei now, Francisco Vigaru, if I didn't go that day, if that didn't happen. It was that going to that event really kind of sparked everything for me. So that's definitely something that stands out as well, and getting to go to his school and everything like that. So that was really awesome. And, I had quite a few people in my life during that time of just like training partners. That was really super fun, because I had like this tiny little space of my own, and I just kind of started out, and it was super fun. Like, there were things like that that really made it, a lot of the hardships throughout it, like, super worth it. And just a lot of growing pain in that.
Very nice. So you get bitten by the bug early on. When did you get into the teaching side of it?
I had always kind of been teaching per se, when I had left that studio and then I was kind of like, didn't know where to go or didn't know what to do, I found a few Kempo studios near me in the area that I would go and I would train and then I would help teach and, you know, whatever. But nothing really like stuck for me. So I was always kind of teaching. And then, you know, I was, like I said, I had this very small space. It was actually in my dad's garage, his automotive garage. And it was only like 200 square feet, so I didn't really have a lot of space to do anything, but I would teach my friends what, you know, my knowledge was at the time. And then, when I met Francisco and started learning under him, then I can, you know, I would come back from traveling from there and teach my students kind of like how I do now. So I was always kind of teaching. I didn't realize, and honestly, I don't even know. I think it is, but I never sought out to be a teacher. It just kind of happened that way. But I knew that this is what I wanted to do, no matter in what capacity.
Very nice. Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of the teachers. They're maybe not, or I should say I'm surprised at how often it happens for people that are not interested, that weren't interested in teaching. And not only do they answer the call of that, but they make it their lives, or they make it a big part of what they're doing. And you hit a certain point where it just really transforms your life, or I should say in my case, in the teaching that I've done, I just always light up when I see the students grow and they get that you know, aha moment, and maybe they're battling with a technique or something, and all of a sudden they hit that moment where they get it,
and right,
it's just, right. It's really kind of uplifting, and just seeing the growth of the students is huge. So I see that as a big driving factor in like what I do, and I assume with you it's kind of similar.
Yeah, I think it was like I said, I never sought out to be, that wasn't my goal to be an instructor like that for some, like, I had the thought, obviously, and it was there in order to do what I do, but that wasn't my driving force. Like, I just wanted to be a really great Kempoist, and whatever came of that, and I really wanted to dedicate myself to the art, and to this art, and, you know, running a business, and obviously everything, you have to be a teacher, so I think that just became a byproduct of me really wanting to be in it. It wasn't the goal that I set out. It was a natural byproduct of me just really being dedicated to the art over time, you know.
Very nice. Very nice. So in contrast with your first school and how they weren't really focused on the fighting aspect of it, how was the transition to school where you got to really work those fighting skills, and how did that transition go for you?
Yeah, it was really fucking awesome. I was so relieved when I was with Mr. Tatum, or the first time, like when I went to his school in California, and like I just watched these humans like really like kick the shit out of each other, and it was awesome, and I was so excited, and I was like, hell yeah, like this is what I was looking for. I just didn't know how to get it, and I didn't know, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. And it was beautiful because you're doing this really brutal and violent dance with someone, but you might hurt each other a little bit, but everyone's okay, and it's so cool. Like, it was so beautiful to watch just the like beautiful symphony that people have when they do Kempo together, of we're doing this really brutal, devastating thing, but we both have the control enough to not push the envelope, but to push it just enough. And it was so cool. And I was so excited to learn that skill. And the same thing with sparring of, yeah, I mean, you get hurt. Like, you get hurt all the time. This is a very, can be, if done correctly, a hard, physically demanding thing. But I loved it. I loved all of that. I'm someone a long time ago referred to me as a sled dog of, I will do any like hard physical thing, like the harder the better. And I don't know, I think I tapped into that. I knew that it was always in there, but I just tapped into it having these sort of experiences over time. And I was just so happy. And then I just really developed that skill, you know, with these people throughout my training over the years. Same thing with sparring. You know, I didn't know, one, sparring existed at the time, but also two, I didn't realize in that capacity you could do it like that and you're not gonna really, you know, hurt each other too severely. And now my kids love it. My kids here, they spar. They ask me to spar like almost every day. Like, they always want to do it if we have time. And I teach them some of the stuff that I've learned and everything I know. And it's really great. You know, that, like you said, kind of getting bitten by that bug. I think I didn't get bit. I think it was always there. And, you know, it just needed something to release that. So
very nice. So since you mentioned the getting the kids to spar, I know something that I've seen in my school and I've seen in other schools is that when sparring day comes around, sparring night comes around, everybody all of a sudden has things they need to do. You know, they left the oven on or something like that.
Yeah.
So what are your kind of tips for getting the kids and I'm gonna add the adults, the teens and the adults too, because yes, I know plenty of adults that also all of a sudden have that big work assignment to do on sparring night. So
yeah, and I want to make it clear, when I say kids, I don't mean like little kids. Like, my kids now are between the ages of like 10, 12, all the way to 15, 16. So I want to make it clear that these aren't like little guys. Like, they're all very much so older, so they kind of know the deal. But I would say make it super fun. Like, make it fun, but not in the like rah, rah, kid fun type of way. But just be honest. And I'm super honest with them of like, listen, this is a hard thing. And I kind of make it their idea of like, you know, Are you capable of like handling this? Because I think you are, and I see you and how hard you're working and everything like that. So I think you can do this really hard thing. And then they do it and they're like, oh my God, you know? And same thing with the adults. They love it. They, at least my adults anyways, they really enjoy it. And we make it fun. You know, we do an iron shirt. We do like a lot of ground stuff. We do like, you know, stuff that I know they will enjoy, stuff I enjoy. And I think that is where sometimes communication between instructor and student gets lost of, well, as an instructor, I'm making you do this thing because, well, someone made me do this thing, not because I enjoyed it, you know. And with my students, there are times, yeah, of course, we all have to do stuff we don't want to do, rightfully so. But I enjoy doing these things. I enjoy sparring. I enjoy doing X, Y, and Z. I enjoy doing Kempo basics and forms and all of this stuff. So if I enjoy doing it, I want to present it in a way that will make you enjoy it as well. I think sometimes I've seen a lot of, in the Kempo world, a lot of just the attitude of, well, I'm sensei, so do what I say. And I don't know. I don't like that. I don't think that that's cool. I don't have that type of relationship with my students, adults or teenagers. We're all pretty equal. I just happen to be doing this longer than you. There's really, they all respect me. They all listen to me. It is so rare that one of my students kind of maybe gets out of line or like is a little aggressive or like, you know, whatever. But I'm reasonable enough to just understand, like, people are people, man, you know, like people are people and they're learning too. Like, they're learning how to be in this sort of thing too. And we're all just doing the same thing. I want to know more. I want to learn more. And so do they. I'm just a few steps ahead of them.
Anyways. Yeah, I always I always scratch my head for instructors and teachers, whatnot, that feel that they've reached the end, so to speak, and they know it all. I mean, just with
yeah,
any
there's
art,
quite a few of them.
Yeah, you know, there's so much to learn that you know, you can't learn it in one lifetime, and we're always a student. I don't care how long you've been training. You're still always there's always something new to learn and be able to refine the things that you do know. And so just being, oh, well, I'm top of the mountain and y'all should bow before me. I've never been a fan of that. And
yeah, me either.
So very nice. So so with your training, have you done any competing at all?
Very minimal. Again, that was just not really my thing. Again, it was just a byproduct of doing this. I've competed a little bit over the years. I mean, it's fun. It's cool. It's definitely an experience, you know, everyone should have, maybe, you know, just a couple of times just to feel the feeling of what that is. I also never played a sport as a child or as a teenager. I was never in any sports. So maybe tournament to me was the equivalent of, you know, competing in a game to win. I didn't have that experience. So Kempo was it for me. So maybe my, like I said, competing was just filling that gap. But yeah, I have competed. I've competed in, let me think here, at the IKCs a few times, I think maybe once or twice when they were around my area. I also competed at an event in England twice, I believe. And yeah, very, you know, very minimal things.
And just in sparring, or did you do any other divisions?
I did. It was primarily forms I competed in. That was kind of what I really liked. And I just really enjoyed that. So that was primarily what I had competed in.
And what was your go-to form?
Oh, I couldn't tell you now. I couldn't tell you what I did then. Maybe it was like long four, long five, something like that. I think I did long form four at the IKCs many years ago. I really couldn't tell you. That's honestly a guess.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I only did a handful of tournaments and just sparring, and pretty sure I got disqualified every single one. So go to the open tournaments and never. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't think I ever been to kind of a strictly Kempo tournament, but yeah, I would get disqualified for head contact, face contact, as my go-to was the old back knuckle reverse punch, back knuckle to the head and reverse punch to the body, and throw that back knuckle out, or do what we called the California Blitz, and we'd do that, and yeah, get that point taken away, get that warning, and just muscle memory, go and do it again, and now it's time.
Yeah,
to
point sparring is hard. I find it very challenging to even want to do that sort of thing because, you know, people who really, really compete in point sparring, like, they're, I'm sure that they're great, but you don't have to be great to earn a point. You know, yeah, like, you can be a great fighter and do point sparring, and that's fine, but you don't have to be good at sparring to earn points, which is wild. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, discrepancies or things like that, or like you said, you know, rules that exist that maybe shouldn't, or whatever the case may be. It's the best way, I suppose, to keep score, obviously, and to decide who wins, but it doesn't necessarily mean who's the better fighter per se. You know, it's an interesting thing. It's a challenging thing. especially with competition. I truly believe Kempo is and should not really be, or should not have been in competition with other arts, you know, because Kempo is Kempo, but, you know, if I compete against someone in Taekwondo, I'm going to get, you know, literally kicked in the head a whole bunch, but we don't do that in Kempo, you know, mm-hmm. So it's a very difficult, challenging thing to kind of put on a sliding scale, but we figure it out. We figure it out.
Yeah. No, that was the thing when I was young, the sparring aspect was so exciting. And now that I look through it with my old man eyes, the point sparring specifically, it doesn't even look like a real fighting to me. And, just there's no, like, they're not even, or at least a lot of the ones that I've seen, they're not even in a fighting stance, and they have their arms down, and they're just kind of in this weird pose, and they're doing these kind of weird, you know, game of tag things, and it's like, what's happening? This is not a fighting as I remember it. So, but,
right.
But I do think it's still a good thing to do, and definitely get those skills and get out there. And being that this is a combat art, if you don't ever do any sort of combat, then it's kind of defeating the purpose of the training. So that's the way I see it. There are probably some point fighters out there that are like, shut up, but that's okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
So with Kempo, have you done any kind of cross training in any other arts, or just all Kempo all the time?
Yeah, all Kempo all the time. Yeah, that's really it. I never did anything else. I don't plan to do anything else. You know, I've dabbled, like, I have friends who, you know, do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and have taught me stuff just because we're training together, you know what I mean? But really nothing that I went and did on my own and whatever. No, never. That's really it. It's funny. I was actually talking to a friend of mine. His name is Justin, and he was here at my studio kind of recently. And Justin is a phenomenal martial artist, and he goes to, like, China and, you know, does all these awesome things, and he does quite a few different arts. And he asked me, he goes, "You've never done anything other than Kempo?" And I was almost, like, embarrassed when he asked me, because this guy, you know, does all this crazy cool shit, and I've done nothing. Like, I haven't done anything like that. But, I mean, I've done stuff, but, you know, nothing like that. And I was almost embarrassed to be like, no. And he paused a moment, and he goes, "Actually, that's really impressive." And I was like, "Oh, thank God." I was like, "Oh, thank God. I'm glad you found that impressive." He goes, "No, that's really impressive, actually, to just never stray and to feel like you just, like, you're like, you have everything you need out of this." And I kind of think about that, you know, when people ask me, it's like, well, maybe it is impressive. I don't know. But I do know that there are other people like me out there that really haven't dabbled in much of anything else. And it's not because I wouldn't want to, or it's not because I don't find it fascinating. It certainly is, but nothing really calls to me like this does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. It's funny to me how there's kind of a shift in how martial arts used to be, and you would be at a school, and if you were like, "Oh, well, I want to kind of try this other thing," and your teacher would be like, "No, you only do this. You only train here. You only train at this."
There are still places that are like that, unfortunately.
So there wasn't a lot of kind of seeking out other things, and now it's kind of you know, like you mentioned, everybody cross trains these days, and it's odd to be the one that only does one style. And yeah, with martial arts, finding you, it just may not, you know, be your time for that, and there's nothing wrong with that. Kenpo covers a lot of the bases, so got plenty of tools in the toolbox to work with, and you have to go with what speaks to you, and you know, if that's just Kenpo, that's great, and if it's like me doing a bunch of different arts at one time, probably too much, but yeah. That's what's speaking to me right now. Along with my muscles, I went to 6 a.m. jiu-jitsu this morning. So
nice.
It's amazing that I'm still upright, but we make it work. So along with the Kenpo or I should say what other things are you involved with, whether they be related to Kenpo or not related to Kenpo? It's kind of what other things do you have occupying your time these days?
Really nothing. It's pretty much just this all the time. You know, being a business owner, it is challenging to find time, really, because I don't get to just be here and train all day. You know, I wish I could, but unfortunately, I can't. I do train a lot, but, you know, even on days that I'm here all day from, you know, 9, 10 a.m. until 9, 10 p.m. is like, I haven't gotten to train all day. And people are like, well, you own a studio, right? And it's like, yes, but there are so many more things that need to come before me that day. And whether that be other people or social media or editing or posting or errands or, you know, the list goes on and on of what needs to be done in a day to keep a facility going, at least now, because social media and everything does play such a huge part in it, where I think, you know, many years ago, it wasn't as important. You know, you basically just put an advertisement somewhere maybe and people just showed up and you didn't really have to do anything else. But now we have to do that. So as far as other things that occupy my time, it's basically just this. Yeah. It's basically just this, really.
Gotcha. So the transition from quote unquote being the full-time student to the instructor, the leader, the head honcho, how has that transition been going for you? Or there are kind of things that maybe you wish you had done differently? Or
I don't really think I wish I would have done things differently, because if I did, then I wouldn't be in this position, you know? So as far as that, I don't really think so. But I did find myself many years ago when I first started, like I said, of all of the slew of responsibility that came that I was just unaware of, was certainly a culture shock of just like, oh shit, I have to do everything. Like, you know, when I'm done, I don't get to leave and someone else does the cleaning and the this and the that and everything else. I have to do it all. So it definitely just, you know, I didn't mind though. And I still don't mind. I've now in my business gotten to a point where I'm so beyond grateful and humbled and lucky. I now have a few more people that are on my team. So it does feel really nice. You know, I do the majority of everything because I want to make my instructors' lives as easy as possible. But I do have now people that are such a huge help, you know, to me. So that feels really nice.
So to kind of jump back on the instructor part of it. So for me, I am kind of quote unquote new to teaching the Kenpo side of things. I've taught Capoeira for a lot of years, so I'm not a new teacher, so to speak. But I'm curious what advice would you give to a new instructor or maybe somebody that's thinking about getting into teaching? What kind of advice would you give them in pursuing that?
Really know your shit. Really know your shit. And I say that because in my experience, Kenpo is very political, and it's very mean. And it's a very mean community, unfortunately. It's not always as kind as you and I are. And it's very mean, and it can be very brutal. And the best defense, no pun intended, or the best weapon you can have is your knowledge. The best thing that you can have is your knowledge, because nobody can take that away from you. And only, it's a self-educating thing, right? Same thing with maybe capoeira or Brazilian jiu-jitsu or whatever. It's a self-educating thing. Kenpo is the same thing. And if you're going to start to teach Kenpo, I would recommend anybody really study. And by study, read whatever material you want, read whatever books you want, whatever you feel will help your education in the Kenpo world, and study with your body. Do Kenpo a lot, and like more than maybe you think you should. Even for me, like I said, there are some days it's like, oh shit, you know, I didn't have time today, or I didn't make the time, or, you know, whatever. But that is how I study, because I need to be a good teacher. And I've seen that through my sensei, and I was taught that just by watching my sensei, of how much he studies and how much he trains. And we just saw each other a few days ago, funny enough, and we trained for hours. And that is the best lesson to me that I could have ever received. He doesn't really even have to explain much, because I do it and I figure it out, and then we talk about it. But really, really know your shit, because you got all the, you know, senseis or the people that are up on that fucking hill that are going to tell you that you're terrible and that you're wrong and that you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, because they started doing Kenpo 40 years ago, they know better. And it's okay. You know, it's all right. But really know your shit and just be confident in it. And also, too, when you're wrong or when you don't know something, just say it. I say it to my students all the time. Someone will ask me a question, and because our syllabus is fucking ridiculous, like how ridiculous the Kenpo syllabus is, in my opinion, there's a lot to remember. So you have to, in order to be a very good teacher, you have to remember all of that. And that can be overwhelming to anybody, you know, it can be overwhelming. So of course I might forget things, or of course I might put a different extension with a different technique and then realize like, oh shit, that wasn't right, you know, of course, because we're just human. Everyone's just human, and we have so much shit to remember in our daily lives anyways. Now I got to remember all this stuff in order to teach it. And I tell my students very often of like, listen, I do not know everything. I don't claim to know everything. Quite frankly, I don't even want to. I don't even want to know everything. And when I don't know something, I will figure it out, or I will absolutely find you someone who does, if it's not me. You want to know Brazilian jiu-jitsu? I know someone. You want to know a defense against da-da-da? That's okay. I know someone. It's not going to be me, but I know someone who can help you. And I think sometimes some instructors, not all, but as you were saying earlier, they're just really up on that high horse of, well, I know everything. And that's a big weight to carry. So, you know, you better. But for me, I don't feel that way. Like I said, I don't know everything, and I don't want to. I want to know a lot, though. I want to be very educated. I want to know a lot, but I don't claim to know everything. And if you're going to be a good Kenpo instructor, just know your shit.
Very nice. Very nice. So what are your thoughts on kind of the future of Kenpo? Where do you think you see it heading? Where would you like to see it head? Where it's kind of, especially kind of with the advent of MMA and kind of people, at least in my perspective, there's a more of a push for the kind of combat sport aspect and not the martial art. And I use art in bold capital letters there. We're getting away from the Mr. Miyagi days and that kind of humbleness and grit and training and whatnot. So curious what your kind of thoughts are on the future of Kenpo and kind of where it should go.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful question. As far as where I think it should go, I mean, my opinion, I guess, of it is Kenpo needs to be attractive. And it's not sometimes in the way that it is now, because it has such a, you know, you have to have this criteria of what it is that you need to do in order to do Kenpo. If I walked into a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school right now and I said, hey, I'd like to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu in my sweatshirt and my leggings and whatever, they would say, okay, come on. I don't have to get a uniform. I don't have to do anything. I don't need to get a belt. Like, there's no gi Brazilian jiu-jitsu for a reason. There's no gi, you know, taekwondo or sport or this or that or whatever the case may be. Oh, and you have to learn 154 techniques, 96 extensions, 24 forms and sets if you want to do this. You know, it's very unattractive. It's very unappealing. And that's why I feel like a lot of adults have a hard time wanting to maybe start in their adulthood of, oh, shit, I got to wear this weird thing. And, you know, I feel uncomfortable, you know, and it's very unattractive sometimes, and some people really enjoy that. I really enjoy that, but that's my, like you said, that's my art, so I enjoy that. But someone who wants to do training, Kenpo makes it very challenging to just do it on a whim. Like for me and my Kenpo students, half of them wear uniforms, half of them don't, and the only ones that wear the uniform is because they want to and they're tired of their shirts getting ripped. Like, it was purely just a, you know, tactical reason rather than an aesthetically pleasing one. Half of my adult students don't wear their gis, and I don't care, because the knowledge I'm going to give to you is going to be the same whether you're dressed normally or whether you have a uniform on. It really doesn't matter. And it's great. You know, it's really great. And I think sometimes people in my, you know, generation of Kenpoists had those type of instructors of do what I say and I'm sensei and you don't go anywhere else and these are the rules and this is the tradition and this is why you do it this way. And that now gets passed to us and it makes it very, you know, hard. And that's why I think some of the time Kenpo can be very unattractive. And when you see people in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or MMA or anything like that, it's like, man, it's so relaxed. And they have no syllabus. They don't have to follow anything. They don't have to be belt tested in front of a whole panel that needs to sign off saying you did it. Like, you know, it's very casual. It's attractive. It's very, you know, appealing to the eye because anybody can do it. You know, you don't have to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 10 years to be good at it. You can get good very quickly and in your leggings, you know. I really try to put my Kenpo out there that way of having just a more relaxed vibe, because I think the tighter you try to hold on to something, the worse it's going to get. You know, you just kind of have to let that go and something greater will absolutely happen because of that relaxation and that. So that's what I think. And as far as the future of Kenpo, I think that there really won't be one too much unless that thing sort of happens, you know, because all of the other arts will evolve as well, you know. Of course they will, and we really haven't too much. So I don't really think, you know, there will be a very large one without that sort of attitude.
Gotcha. I like it. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and move into our lightning round here. I got a few little questions to throw at you as we head towards wrapping up. The first one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Oh, jeez. I wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah, I like to throw that out there, kind of get folks off guard there.
I really like it's just coming to me now. I don't even know if this is my favorite, but it's one of them. I really like Snaking Talon with the extension. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good one. I like that. Always mess it up on the second side, so
yeah.
But I think everybody does that, or I should say everybody that does second side. For those that don't do second side, don't hate me, don't send me angry letters or emails or whatever.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I really like Stand Set 2. I really enjoy that set. My favorite form? I just recently started learning Long 8 just the other day. So that might be one of my new favorites. But for an entire form that I know, I would probably have to say Long 6.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. That's something that I've been surprised about on this since doing this show is the stance sets are get a lot of love. Number of previous guests have mentioned stance set, so I like to hear that. Very nice. All right, next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Well, again, learning Long 8. Definitely knives are super fun. It's just fun. Like, there's nothing really about it. It's just fun. I learned Long 7, and the sticks were my favorite at the time, and now moving on. But yeah, I think probably that Long 8, yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, final question. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be? Well, I should say, besides Ed Parker, since this is a Kenpo podcast, who would you like to train with?
Did you assume that was going to be my choice?
Well, you know, when I first started asking the question, you know, this being a Kenpo podcast, a lot of people said Ed Parker, and I realized, oh, well, that's going to be too easy. So
yeah.
Whenever I talk to a Kenpoist, then I take Ed Parker off the table. So got to make it work for it a little bit.
Yeah. Dead or alive.
Dead or alive, fictional or non-fictional. And you can also include those that you have trained with before. Those are on anyone ever, anywhere. That's they're all game except for Ed Parker.
Okay. I kind of have two answers.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if two is allowed.
There are no rules here. You can put in as many folks as you want.
All right. I would say my first one, but I want to be specific in taking Ed Parker out of the equation. But I would love to have. I'm sure a lot of people say this, but I think my reasons are different. I would have really loved to do a train with Bruce Lee. And I'm not a Bruce Lee fan in the sense of movies and this and that. Like, oh, I don't care. I don't care about that. What I'm so curious of and why I wish I could do that is purely because, like, he did something that set him apart. And he did a thing that nobody else could do or was willing to do. And also, yes, I mean, working alongside Mr. Parker as well. But he set the status of what martial arts would continue to be and what it would look like. And the nitty-gritty of how he did it, what was he doing, his training, his diet, his nutrition, his this, his sleep, like that nitty-gritty of it is something I would be so curious about and wish, you know, we could find out one day. And I know that people have released like his handwritten workouts and stuff, and that's cool, but that's not him doing it. You know, I wish I could see him do it. I want to talk to him about doing it and why those specific things to kind of set this, you know, standard. And then my second one, my second one, I've met her, but I obviously couldn't have met her in the past, but my second one would be Diane Tanaka.
Oh, yes.
Who is a female Kempoist. Like I said, I've met her maybe, I actually met her at the IKCs that I had competed in. And Diane Tanaka now has really pulled away from Kempo and has moved away from Kempo, which is fine. I probably can be understanding some of the reasons why, but I wish I could have shared the floor with Diane Tanaka in, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, or whatever, during that time when Kempo was really at its peak, when, you know, Mr. Parker was really there and everybody was there. And I really wish that, because she's very well known in the Kempo community, or at least she was. And I did admire her. I think that's where my love for long six comes in, because there is quite a bit of footage of her doing that long form six, and it was beautiful. And she was a very great Kempoist. And again, I would like to train with her during that time.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, she's one of the greats. That's a great answer. I like it. All right, so we are going to move to our point of shameless self-promotion. So now you can plug anything that you'd like, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that we didn't cover today. Now's your time. You have the floor, and then we'll close out from there.
Okay. Thank you very much. And yeah, thank you so much for having me and for asking me. And this has been super wonderful. And you're a wonderful host. For a shameless self-plug, I've recently released two fitness ebooks that are for purchase on my website. I have a 5-week digital training program called Semper Invicta, which is 4 workouts a week, and it's for 5 weeks long. And I also released a second ebook called Just Peachy, which is a lower body glute and leg training program, another digital training program. It's 12 of my favorite lower body glute focused, leg focused exercises and workouts that can be done at any time. So you don't have to follow the guide, you know, you don't have to do it every day, but you can incorporate them into your daily training as well. And it's not, I want to make it clear that it's not just for women, but I know women are always looking to, you know, improve their legs or their glutes or whatever the case may be, but it is for anyone looking to do any sort of lower body training. So those are available for purchase on my website, which is driventotrain.coach. I'm here in Whitensville, Massachusetts. We offer fitness, martial arts, obviously, yoga now, which is really, really exciting. And in 2 weeks from now, again, I'm going to go off on this shameless self-plug, but in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from now, we're hosting a really big event here at my studio with Grandmaster Larry Tatum is going to be coming here. I'm going to have all of my friends, David Pantano, my instructor, Francisco Vigoro, my friend Tony Martin, who is down in Baltimore. They're all going to be here teaching seminars, and it's going to be a really, really fantastic event. And I'm beyond excited and humbled that I am now in a you know, position to be able to do this sort of thing. So that's happening in 2 weeks. So I'm slowly losing my mind a little bit in the preparation for it, but it's going to be really, really fabulous. It's going to be a phenomenal time, and we only have a few tickets available if anyone listens between now and then. So I think we only have like 5 or 6 left. So.
All right. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to tell me your story and share some of your insights, and hopefully we can do this again at another time and dig in deeper on more specific topics. But I just thank you so much for being on, and can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. And any links or things like that, make sure to send them to me, and I'll make sure that they get in the show notes. I'm trying to get better at that, so. once again, just thank you so much for being on, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I definitely look forward to doing it again.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.